Freeman Report on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello and welcome to today's Freeman Report. There are many things about the Middle East conflict that are shocking. The killing of 1,200 Israelis and the holding of hostages, even some till today, are still being held. The flattening of Gaza and the killing of 34,000 civilians. The restriction of food and water to the more than a million people, and the shooting of people waiting in line to get food aid. And now we hear about mass graves and evidence of torture and execution. The list of atrocities is now too numerous to mention all of them. Is there not, therefore not surprising that citizens across the West are protesting and calling for peace, particularly given the military support that Israel gets from taxpayers in those countries? In the UK, we've heard many calls for the London protests to be stopped, with some referring to those who attend the marches as Hamas supporters, despite the vast majority of protesters being nothing of the sort. Jews are not safe in London. We've lost our country and we must take it back, are the cries that we've heard from some on the right in the UK. But, and this is the good part, UK authorities have largely rejected these calls and have called out the stage stunts designed to turn up the heat on the protests and bolster calls for them to be stopped. Gideon Falter is rightly being condemned for his dog whistle tactics. Although I must say how embarrassing it is that the British Prime Minister joined those saying they were shocked at what was clearly a staged attempt to manipulate public opinion. In the land of the free, though, where free speech is literally written into the Constitution, we are seeing a very different situation emerge. In the past day, we've seen shocking scenes of police using force against students and academics peacefully protesting at campuses across the country, including Columbia, Yale, Harvard, Cornell, and the University of Southern California. How can this be? Is America not free anymore? The Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, condemned the pro-Palestinian protests, saying the demonstrations have to be stopped. And lo and behold, just after he said that, just like that, the police rushed the protesters, using force to disperse them and arresting hundreds in the process. Like the economics professor, Caroline Folin, who was knocked to the ground by police and then handcuffed while her face was pushed into hard concrete. All this while she shouts, "I'm a professor." And the police pointing automatic rifles in the faces of students at Emory University in Atlanta, where we've also heard reports that police have been using tasers and pepper spray to break up the protests. Netanyahu has claimed that the protests are reminiscent of what happened in German universities in the 1930s, which, quite frankly, is a load of horseshit and an affront to intelligent people around the world. Let's be clear. Israel is not the victim. Not anymore. It cannot be. Not when you stack up the stats. 1,200 Israeli citizens killed, yes, in horrific circumstances. But look at the number of Palestinian citizens that have now been killed. It is in the tens of thousands. You cannot claim to be a victim with these stats. But when Israeli money is allowed to flow into US politics via powerful lobbies such as APEC, this is what you get. US politicians jumping to the calls of a foreign leader. As far as I can see, the American Constitution is being trampled on to silence calls for peace at the behest of a foreign leader. So, what should freedom-loving Americans do? Well, in my opinion, a good start would be to demand that APEC and other powerful Israeli lobbies lose their exemption from being classified as a foreign entity. Because until that happens, US politicians across the country will continue to put calls from the Israeli Prime Minister before the constitutional rights of their own citizens. It's not rocket science, ladies and gentlemen. AIPAC was originally called the American Zionist Committee for Public Affairs until they thought, maybe we should change the name to hide the fact that the lobby is run to serve the interests of a foreign government. Until these exemptions from Israeli lobbies in the US are removed and Israeli money is stopped from flowing directly into the hands of US politicians, until that happens, US politicians will find it impossible to be critical of Israel. Right, coming up in this hour, first up, I'm going to be discussing what the hell is going on in Holyrood, the Scottish Parliament. My guest for this discussion will be Scottish politician Neil Fraser. Then after that, I'm going to discuss the protests on US campuses with Army veteran and former GOP congressional candidate Jason Nelson. I'll be asking Jason if free speech is only allowed if it doesn't criticise Israel. I think possibly it's going to end up in an argument because I get the feeling from his ex feed that he doesn't agree with that stance. But hey, I'm going to put the question to him anyway. If any of you want to get in touch about anything to do with the show, then email me at jamesfreeman@tntradio.live. And as always, if you enjoy watching the show and you appreciate what TNT is doing, then get yourself over to social media. We're on all of the leading platforms and give me, James Freeman, and TNT Radio a follow and a shout out. My name is James Freeman, and this is the Freeman Report for today's News Talk TNT.
Conversations to inform and include.
It's meant for everyday people to understand.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right, over to our UK news correspondent, Gemma Cooper, for today's breaking news.
Well, the top story is what the hell is going on in Scotland. Scottish politics has been described today as in utter chaos. The First Minister, Hamza Youssef, is fighting for his position, and it seems like he will come out fighting at a speech he's due to make at Housing Association, I think, in Dundee in a few hours' time this afternoon. He cancelled a speech earlier at the University of Strathclyde in Glasgow, but he will face questions from the media at a speech in Dundee. He lives near Dundee, and then he was going to be making a speech there. He's facing two separate possible confidence votes, no confidence votes, one brought by the Scottish Labour Party, which isn't a one on him individually, it's for the entire Scottish government. Some saying they haven't got the votes to push that through, but we will see. Also, in the last hour, two British men have been charged with helping Russian intelligence in the UK after a suspected arson attack against a Ukrainian-linked business. They've been charged under the new National Security Act, which was brought in last year to ostensibly make the UK a safer place. They are the first people to have been charged with it. Our Foreign Secretary, Dave Cameron, unelected, as today he said he's deeply concerned that British nationals would be helping the Russians. And also, two men have appeared in court today, charged in connection with the small boat crossing deaths in the English Channel earlier this week. The two have been charged with assisting unlawful immigration and attempting to arrive in the UK without a valid entry clearance. That's relating to the five deaths of three men, a woman and a little girl on Tuesday on a very packed dinghy.
Yes, there you go, Gemma. They've been charged, and they've been charged for assisting illegal entry into the UK. So we know that actually, you know, we don't need deaths in the Channel for this to happen. So I'm going to repeat my question that I said yesterday, which is, why has this not been happening? Why have we not been seeing this happen more frequently? It's absolutely ridiculous that it takes deaths in the Channel for this to happen. What's the position on Scotland, Gemma? Has anybody, I mean, I've heard calls on social media for the Scottish Parliament and for devolution to be scrapped. I think this is further evidence that it just isn't working. Of course, during the pandemic, we saw lots of political games between Wales and Scotland and Westminster. Have any politicians opened up that conversation yet?
Sorry, you lost me there with your train of thinking. Just clarify that for me a bit.
Yeah, so obviously we're hearing calls for Hamza Youssef to step down. and for maybe even a confidence vote in the government itself. But I've heard a lot of chatter reigniting the conversation and calls for the parliament to be scrapped, the whole thing. Devolution has clearly not been a success. As I said, you know, during the pandemic, we saw lots of political games, which confused the hallowed of people in the UK between the ministers in Scotland and Wales and the Prime Minister in Westminster. There's lots of chatter like that on social media, but have any politicians, given recent events, started to talk about that?
Not yet. No. I think it's a question of, you know, don't take that route, because you'll find yourself out of a job pretty quickly, wouldn't you? So, yeah, you mean the whole issue of devolved government. Yeah. At the moment, the kind of official version of events is, let's try and get Humza Yousaf out. Let's see if we can do this confidence vote in the entire government, i.e. getting rid of Scottish National Party and, you know, ostensibly Labour swooping in. That's what they would want. Or the Tories, either one would like to be in charge. But no, nothing of that. And obviously social media rife with opinion, speculation. I mean, I saw something on social media saying, oh, just wait, we'll see Nicola Sturgeon back before you know it. Now, of course, you know, you would think no way, not ever. But we've seen David Cameron come back into the cabinet in a very senior role. I'm not saying Nicola Sturgeon is coming back, but I think just the fact it's been described as a shambles now, Scottish politics in utter chaos, that the Greens have said that. Obviously, they would say that. They're the ones who effectively Humza Yousaf broke up with yesterday when they didn't see it coming. But certainly it is chaotic. And he's cancelling a speech, then he's making a speech. It's sort of right hand, left hand, what is going on? And it's the end of the week. By the time we come back on Monday, this story will have moved on apace. But it's the confidence vote, really the no confidence vote, that he's likely to be facing. And will he go even after that? Or will, you know, the very good point you made yesterday, does anybody want an election? No, probably not. It's all up in the air. It's all up in the air. And only 2 days before breaking the Bute House agreement with the Greens, he'd been saying what a great agreement it was. So it really is chaotic. It is chaotic, but I'm sure he'll take to that stage in Dundee, explain his actions. He's going to take questions from the media, so we'll see what he says. Whether or not it's in time for our next update in the next hour, I'm not sure. But yeah, chaos in Scotland today in the Scottish Parliament and in politics generally.
Yeah, and I was just, as you were saying that, Gemma, I was just doing a search. 2021 was when the Scottish Parliament, the last elections were. So I guess we've got, what, another, they're due next year. So I'm just trying to figure out, you know, where how early the election would be if we did get one in Scotland. I'm still sticking by my guns on what I said yesterday, in that I think that even if politicians in the SNP actually want rid of Humza, he's actually doing more damage now, particularly with that speech. I saw a brilliant post from Dee Dee Denslow, actually on X this morning, saying P45, white. You know, remember that speech where he literally called everything white? Let's say it, P45, white. yeah, he's clearly doing a lot of damage to the SNP. But I think regardless of that, I think they realise that if he goes, it does call into question the whole government, and maybe then we see calls for an election. So I don't think they will vote him out. Might be wrong. I'm not an expert on Scottish politics. But yeah, we'll have to see. But it is fast moving. And I think whatever happens, I think we could see it concluded in the next couple of days, Gemma.
But very possibly. We might see another shift in the next hour. Who knows? I mean, this story is changing literally by the minute. You know, he's no speech and a speech. A confidence vote, then another confidence vote. You know, it is extraordinary. But you could argue, no, he brought this entirely upon himself by what he did yesterday, breaking up with the Greens, you know, in the historic agreement that was brokered well by Nicola Sturgeon, wasn't it? So that they could have a majority government with the two pro-independence parties. You know, you could ask, what was he? Who was he being advised by? What was he thinking? It doesn't really matter now, does it? The wheels are in motion. Yeah. It's where the wheels stop is what the question everyone's asking. How will this end for him?
Yeah, exactly. And do you know what time his speech is in Dundee, Gemma?
No, I don't know the time. Just this afternoon is the time, and he will take questions. So we may have an update.
Yeah, I was wondering if we potentially have an update in the second hour. Anyway, I'll look forward to that, Gemma. Thank you very much, and speak to you in the second hour of the show. Right, to the rest of you, the first conversation today with my guest, Neil Fraser, who's a Scottish politician, is going to be that question. What the hell is going on in Holyrood in the Scottish Parliament? So don't go anywhere. Stay right where you are, right here on TNT.
TNT's Joseph Arthur.
I wonder if you can simplify sort of the different components of the war that we're in, how it's working, what the motivation is.
The bottom line is nitrogenous fertilizers are one of the main engines, and those are being interrupted. And that's why I went to BASF twice before Nord Stream was cut, because I suspected they were going to cut Nord Stream. So I was there with Misako Ganaha at BASF, and I asked somebody inside the plant, it's a 10 square kilometer plant, right? And so I asked him, what happens if Nord Stream is interrupted? This was before it was interrupted. He said, we are dead. Well, now it's gone. It's been destroyed, right? And I predicted that publicly.
Joseph Arthur and his Technicolor Dreamcast on today's News Talk, TNT.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
Now I want to say this, and I'm going to say it just once.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right, so let's start off in Scotland. I'm not going to try and do the accent. I was tempted there for a second, but I make a right tear of myself. So I'm not going to try and do that, but I have got a real Scotsman on with me. Welcome back to the Freeman Report, Neil Fraser.
No, it's an absolute pleasure to be here, James. Just detailing all the sort of pandemonium that's gone on in Holyrood. So what would you like to know? Just what's happening?
Yeah, I guess, first of all, give us an update. Obviously, okay. We've heard some of the points, but obviously you're a politician, you're a Scottish politician. So give us the detail. Give us the grimy detail on what's been going on.
So, I mean, just to recap, the last 2 days in Scottish politics has been unlike anything I've ever seen in my entire life. So just to recap, yesterday, Humza Yousaf was under extreme pressure and ended the Bute House Agreement, which was the power-sharing deal with the Greens. And as a result, he's sacked Patrick Harvey and Lorna Slater as government ministers. And then later that day in Holyrood, the divorced couples were openly feuding in Parliament like schoolgirls. And incredibly enough, Douglas Ross has even lodged a motion of no confidence in Humza Yousaf. That's almost got the instant backing of Labour, the Lib Dems, now the jilted Greens, and of course the Tories, which brings the balance right to a very knife edge. It's almost 64-64 or 65-64, so there's only one vote in this. But again, there was speculation last night from multiple sources that Humza was actually considering his position and would likely resign today, which is yet to happen. But now, with more pressure mounting, a further development this morning was Anas Sawa proposing a vote of no confidence in the entire Scottish government, which, if passed, would trigger an election. Conversely, you know, a vote of no confidence in Humza alone wouldn't necessarily beget an election.
Yeah.
So this Anas Sawa seems to have outmaneuvered Douglas Ross, but It's unclear whether a vote to dissolve the entire government is to go through, because that would be unlikely to get the backing of the SNP, clearly, because they'll be, their seats are up at a risk. You know, they want an extra couple of years at the gravy train.
Yeah, of course they do, especially with all of this stuff. This stuff going on with Nicola Sturgeon and her husband. It's not a good time for the SNP at the moment. Just recap on those numbers. So at the moment, the SNP were in coalition with the Greens, and that gave them two extra seats.
Yes.
Without those two seats, has the SNP got a majority still in the Parliament?
So they've now taken the rash decision to move into a minority government, right? And this was just previously, just 2 days prior to him dissolving the Bute House Agreement, he said that the Bute House Agreement was worth its weight in gold. And now he doesn't know the difference between gold and dog feces. So, I mean, really, the guy's lost the plot. Without these extra two, there is no majority in Holyrood now. So, and even Patrick Harvey said in the chamber yesterday, like, who is he trying to please here? He asked Hamza, are you trying to please Alex Salmond? Are you trying to please Fergus Ewing? Or are you trying to please, I can't remember the other name, but... and then he said, who are you going to rely on now for a majority in Holyrood?
Yeah.
And really, it was quite a tense affair yesterday. So I think Hamza's position is almost untenable. Whether or not he refuses to go if a vote of no confidence goes through on him alone is, I mean, the jury's out on that. I think his position would probably be untenable. He would likely leave, but it's not clear if he would or not. Even you mentioned there Murrell. I forgot to even mention that Peter Murrell was arrested on embezzlement charges. He was the chief executive of the SNP, and now he's up on embezzlement charges. So really, the whole party seems to be crumbling and sort of folding in on itself, and this is just it's a glorious time to be involved in Scottish politics. It's absolutely outrageous. It's off the hook.
It is a glorious time, isn't it? Because I think the SNP has been damaging to Scotland because it's been so focused on just getting independence vote, the second one, even though Scotland had a vote not that long ago, that it's kind of just negated and neglected domestic politics and things like the NHS, the education system in Scotland. Not only that, though, of course, it's created a lot of animosity and really bad politics between England and Scotland, just like we've seen between Wales and Westminster. So, yes, I'll agree with you, Neil. It is a glorious time. Now, what is the composition of the parliament there? Are there any independents that might... Because how many do they need for this majority? Is it just one vote or is it just two?
It looks like it's coming down to one person and one person alone.
Right.
And this person is, she goes by the name of Ash Regan. So Ash Regan was originally an SNP politician and she defected to Alex Salmond's ALBA party, right? So now Alex Salmond almost has the pivotal vote in Hamza's future, which is just absolutely glorious, isn't it?
That's really interesting, actually. I wonder what the conversation is around that, because I guess, you know, you could be the person that calls make sure that an election is called, or you could be the kingmaker and have an awful lot of sway over the SNP.
Absolutely. I mean, Alex Salmond, I still believe, does have a lot of sway over the SNP just because of his history in the movement, the fact he actually brought a referendum. Hamza's no chance of bringing a referendum. It's been such a short period of time. It's only been 10 years since the last one. We were told it was a generation to wait. And really, they just doubled down since that defeat in 2014, like you've just alluded to. And it's really... it's broke the cohesion of the United Kingdom entirely. Every policy that the Tories bring out in England is automatically and, you know, it's intrinsically opposed by the SNP here in Scotland. So nothing really gets done in a cohesive manner in the UK anymore. And like you mentioned, Wales as well. The devolved governments are really crippling the, you know, cohesion of the UK. It's interesting that Alex Salmond has somehow landed on a wee bit of power again. It's very, very strange. But at the same time, I don't think Ash Reagan will have the wherewithal to pull the trigger on this vote of no confidence against Hamza Yousaf, because I think at the end of the day, if there was to be an election, ALBA wouldn't even retain their one seat. So this is the thing. It's all the political horse trading that's going on in the background, James, and you know it's all happening, and it's really quite a disgusting affair. But what I would say to all your viewers, put down your box sets, your Game of Thrones, your Westworlds, put it down and just tune into the Scottish news, because it's better than all of that.
It's really interesting, isn't it? Because the Parliament, when it was created in a circle, the chamber, instead of two benches opposite each other, because it was all supposed to be, you know, a new way of doing politics, friendly politics. Not very friendly at the moment, is it?
No. The knives are out, James. The night of long knives has begun. Last night was literally Hamza was on a knife edge last night. STV were saying within hours of each other, and STV is like the state broadcaster here, so they are known colloquially up here as SNP News. So they were saying previously that Hamza's not going to resign. And then an hour after that, I was saying, well, he's considering his position. So really, it's up in the air. And I think what they were doing is probably floating the idea with the public and with the party to see what the sort of effects were.
Yeah, excellent. Right, we're going to take a quick break now, Neil, but we'll be back in a second. So don't go anywhere, because after this break, I want to kind of just get your view on how you think devolution's gone. I think we've got had a taste and maybe a hint there of what you think about it. But I wonder what your thoughts are on whether actually it is now time to call a failed experiment and actually just reassess the whole thing on how this devolution works, whether that's to change the terms of devolution or maybe even just to get rid of the Welsh and Scottish Parliament. So I'd love to hear your view of that in just a second right here on TNT.
What's happening? Newsflash.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boyland here with your TNT headlines. The UK has come under fire for refusing to condemn the killing of hundreds of civilians found dumped in mass graves in Gaza. Former US President Donald Trump stopped traffic in New York on Thursday as he made a surprise stop at a construction site on his way to court. And London has warned Ukraine will begin ramping up long-range strikes inside of Russia as it starts receiving more advanced weapons from the West.
Why not give TNT Radio a follow? We're on all major social platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, and Getter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time right here on today's News Talk.
TNT Radio.
TNT Radio.
Right. Now, no, we've discussed this situation, on unfolding situation in Scotland at the moment. I'd love to hear your thoughts, given everything that's gone on over the past couple of decades since the Parliament was created, particularly given, you know, this whole thing with the SNP. What are your thoughts now on devolution?
I mean, personally, I think I've often said that the building itself, the Holyrood Parliament, that doesn't do any harm. It's the people inside it that are doing the harm, right? And now that it's built, we may as well use it, right? But at the same time, devolution has cost Scotland dearly. It's the political climate post 2014 and leading up to 2014 was really quite toxic. So I reckon at the moment, we're on balance, the UK would become a better country if Holyrood was just to vanish, if it was just to, a bulldozer was just put it down, and all that money saved by all of these MSPs could be then reinvested into the public. Because really, the population of Scotland doesn't need to be ran by 120 odd MSPs when our population is almost the same as Manchester, where we just got one mayor. So you're seeing what I'm saying? It's that the actual cost of Holyrood is crippling us at the same time. And it's really enabled this culture of corruption to really take grip in Scotland.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, look, it's not just 120 politicians, is it, either? Because, of course, we've got all the MPs in Scotland.
we've got exactly. So we've got all these MPs that are acting against Scotland's or UK interest in Westminster, and then we've got the mirror image of the Scottish Parliament. But at the same time, we've got all their special advisors. We've got all the sort of expenses and everything that come along, all the trappings of government as well. So I mean, we're just being like siphoned dry. And I think this is why the SNP, Labour, they'll never go for dissolving Holyrood at all, because it's just too much of a gravy train to let go of and to sort of turn your ticket in.
Yeah, it's very convenient as well, I think, for Westminster as well, in terms of getting things through the UK as a whole that would be very, very difficult to push from the centre. Because, of course, what we've seen happen in recent years is you kind of push unpopular policies on Wales or Scotland, and then it spreads slowly across mm-hmm. the UK. So I think there's some political reasons for the UK government why they wouldn't want that as well. Niall, let's change the topic altogether. Let's go over, let's look at towards the US. I'm sure that you must have seen these scenes of US students and academics that have been protesting peacefully against what is going on in the Middle East. In the last day, we've seen police I've seen videos of them pointing automatic rifles at students, tasers apparently being used, pepper spray. What are your thoughts on this?
I mean, we're going back in time, James. This is what my thoughts are. We are going exactly back in time to like 1930s Germany, where it's happening again. And really, this... just try to control the narrative in such a forceful way and to stop a peaceful protest is just, it's abhorrent in the most extreme way. I don't really know what else to say about it other than that it's of course horrible. People should be able to protest peacefully, especially, I mean, imagine having a gun pointed at you at a protest. It is unthinkable, James. And you mentioned tasers. I was listening to your show as well. People getting tased at these protests. It's just the whole thing is rather insane.
Yeah, I mean, what are your thoughts on the conflict as a whole in the Middle East?
I mean, as a whole, obviously, I mean, stuff went absolutely bonkers on the 7th of October, but then the response has been completely overblown. They're right to respond, but at the same time, they're not right to turn Gaza into a car park. Yeah. And this is the thing, right? We can't, and I was listening to a show, we can't, with the numbers now, the disparity in the numbers, Israel can't play the victim forever. And all this is sort of coming out now. But overall, and the conflict in the Middle East, I would just hope that that there's a resolution quickly before more lives are lost. I just don't see it happening though, James.
Yeah, Niall, I think you I can see it is a difficult one to talk around, isn't it? Because it's very, very difficult with these atrocities. Obviously today we're now hearing about these, I think it's nearly 400 bodies now have been dug up in Gaza. Mm-hmm. Some of them had their hands bound. There's suggestions that some were buried alive. And of course, the accusation is that there's been torture and executions at the hands of the IDF. So some pretty horrible things going on there. And I think, you know, I think people are right to be worried. What's the general, I mean, you're a politician, what's the general sort of politics of this and public opinion in Scotland?
So, I mean, we've seen like weekly Palestinian marches here in Scotland, in Glasgow and Edinburgh and all the sort of major cities. And it was interesting at the weekend there that, you know, Hamza Yousaf had his own independence march, but that was sort of outnumbered by Palestinian marchers. The Palestinian marchers were almost intertwined with the Scottish nationalists, which is an interesting combination. But Yeah, we've seen Palestinian marches almost week after week after week here in Scotland. I'm not sure what the sentiment is, but there's certainly a lot of feeling between. It'll be the same across Britain, where anywhere we've got these enclaves of Muslim communities, there is going to be backlash. And we've got quite a large Muslim community in here in Scotland, so of course these people are going to be on the march week in, week out.
Yeah, and same in London as well. And of course, there's been lots of calls to have these protests stopped, which ironically has come from quarters. I had somebody on the show yesterday who's, I kind of call loosely as being part of the freedom movement. It's interesting, isn't it, how people suddenly that were protesting against lockdowns and all of that are now kind of saying, well, some protests should be allowed, but others maybe not. It's an interesting turn of events.
Well, again, it takes me back to a moment in the campaign, my last election campaign, where myself were being protested against my election. I had this big group of trans activists protesting against me, and they were just shouting obscenities and falsehoods across the road at me. But then everyone came up, you're not going to phone the police on these guys. You know, no, I'm not. Of course I'm not. They've got exactly the same right as I do, and I'm actually fighting for their right to call me names.
Yes, exactly.
Really, it's again, James, I don't see anyone that purports to be a freedom lover and yet wants to clamp down on protest is not a freedom lover.
Exactly. And that is going to be my question to my US guest today. You know, is freedom of speech now dead in America, given the scenes that we've been seeing? Niall, final question. If there is an election in Holyrood, are you going to stand?
I will stand in almost every election from now until I get in. There just needs to be such radical change here in Scotland that I just can't give up. It looks like 2026. I don't think it will happen. I'm not really ready for an election within the next 2 months, but 2026 will be already raring to go.
Excellent. Niall Fraser, ladies and gentlemen, thank you, Niall, for joining me on the Freeman Report.
It's a pleasure, James. Thank you.
Fantastic. Right, we're going to take a short break now, and when we come back, I'm going to be joined by US Army veteran and former Republican Congress candidate, Jason Nelson. I'm going to be asking him, is free speech dead in America? So don't go anywhere. Stay right where you are, right here on TNT.
I was a quarterback at Hardaway High School. College first round draft pick, on and off the field. We were taught to not show any signs of weakness. During the football season, I would stop eating. But I didn't know I was depressed. I thought that something was wrong with me. For 20 plus years was physical, physical, physical. We didn't have any education behind what mental health was. I started to learn it starts here first. If this is together, I'll be better as a father, as a man, and as a husband. Put the importance on your mental health. I'm not scared to talk about it anymore. The first tool is therapy. The second one is positive self-talk. And then journaling, putting your thoughts on paper. We have to redefine what being a strong man is and heal. Love your mind.
I'm Sandra, this is Jorge, and we were adopted in 2019. I remember when they first came to us, Michael was already a teenager. The whole cliche of they're so lucky to have you guys, and it's the other way around. They have changed our family for the better. They chose to love us. They didn't have to. They chose us. Family.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org.
You're with James Freeman and the Freeman Report on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right. So what is going on in America? Is free speech dead, given the scenes that we've seen on US campuses across the country in the last few days, where the police have been using force, even pointing automatic rifles in the faces of students and academics who are peacefully protesting? So that's going to be my first question. Is free speech dead? My guest is Jason Nelson, who's an Army veteran and former GOP Congress candidate. Welcome to the Freeman Report, Jason.
Thank you for having me. Good morning.
Good morning. And it's, I think it's quite, what time is it with you, Jason?
Oh gosh, it's like 7:30 in the morning right now, which doesn't seem like it's a lot, but when you have five kids, that's very early.
Five kids, wow, okay. Right, well, let's start with a really, really easy question. Is free speech dead in America?
No, I don't think free speech is dead. So I believe more and more that Governor Abbott was set up. They went after a protest that, of all things, was more in violation of sound codes, because they had University of Texas is in finals right now, and you're not allowed to even have a concert, much less a loud protest, because students are supposed to be guaranteed access to, you know, testing areas and quiet and things like that. So I kind of want to support the idea that, hey, you know, when there are rules, there are rules. And yet I am an absolute free speech advocate, which means that I believe that hate groups should be allowed to get up and say their hate. And the reason why is, quite frankly, I like my Nazis in uniform where I can see them. That said, they've crossed a lot of lines, as you've seen at Columbia University, as you've seen at a lot of the Ivy League institutions, that they're organizing to a point where they are attacking Jewish people on campus, where they are repeating slogans, terrorist slogans. Saying I am Hamas is saying I'm a terrorist, and saying you're a part of a terrorist organization is not allowed. I mean, you can say it, but you're going to get arrested and questioned. But I think that one of the things that a lot of people seem to be missing, and I'm not saying you are, I mean, people in general, as they look at this, is that this is just a repeat for us of what happened in 2020. You know, the summer of love, as we like to call it here, all of those slightly peaceful or mostly peaceful protests that's resulted in billions of dollars in burned down buildings and dozens of dead people, cops. It was something that they used to help control the narrative leading up to the election in 2020. Well, here we are sitting here in 2024, and the same thing is happening. And it's happening so quickly, this organization of students. I'm going to put up air quotes, but I'm afraid what my computer will do. But students and then others who are primarily agitators. This is their full-time job. This is what they're paid to do. They're paid to go out and find the cause du jour and run their mouths about it and get everybody amped up and draw attention away from the fact that our institutions have fallen, especially our educational institutions at this point. And we have pro-Hamas, pro-terrorist protests going on right now all around our nation's campuses from a bunch of idiots who have no idea what it's like in the Middle East. They have no idea, no concept of what would happen to them if they even spent 1 minute in Palestine or 1 minute in Iran. But yet, you know, they're out here advocating for something they don't know and nothing about. That said, they have the right to sit here and be idiots unless they break a law, unless they close off a bridge. You close off a bridge, that's you know, you're holding people hostage. And at that point, you're a terrorist. If you shut down a public right of way, you're just not allowed to do that. So we do have rules here in the United States. But that said, I am a free speech absolutist, which means that even when they say horrible, horrible, hateful, gross things, it's just, in my opinion, rather than drawing attention to the cause, it turns people against them, because everybody knows they're gross.
Yeah, and look, you know, if there's attacks against Jewish people and infrastructure, which is seen as Jewish related, then there are already laws on there for the police to go in and arrest those people. But that's not what we've seen here. We've seen a blanket, operation by the police to go in. And I mean, I guess my question to you is, are you saying that all of the protesters are supporting Hamas? We've seen a video of a professor being shoved to the ground with a gun in her face, being handcuffed, and she's like, I'm a professor. Are you really saying that American universities have got a problem, that all of the students there are supporting terrorism?
Oh, I would never use a blanket statement like all, just like I would never think that being a professor makes you immune to laws. So I would say that this is more of a, you have a very distinct section of the left wing that right now is using this as an excuse to be disturbed and angry. If it wasn't Palestine, it would be somebody who was arrested. It would be somebody who was just another left-wing cause. So this is, I think that focusing on whether they're pro-Hamas, whether they're pro-Palestine, which there is a distinct difference, or whether they're anti-war, whether they're anti-military-industrial complex, whether they're anti-federal government, whether they're anti-Zionist state, whether, you know, there's a lot of different ways you could label each of these protesters. But I think in the end, we do have regulations about protesting. Now, as far as how they crack down on them, I'm just more shocked that we're seeing this now, but we didn't see this 4 years ago. You weren't allowed to for it's very weird. It's very weird that a Republican president wasn't allowed to do that.
And I'm going to stop you there, Jason, because actually that's a very, very good point. And that was one I was going to make in terms of the contrast between those BLM protests and the fact, like you said, public infrastructure was damaged. There were riots. And all of that was fine, with the government. Whereas now we're seeing this very, very hardline approach to what is pro-Palestinian protest. Do you think that, sat in the UK, it is clear that a lot of money is flowing into the hands of US politicians from lobbies like AIPAC and other Israeli supporting lobbyists in the US. Do you think that's part of it?
I mean, I think that you also would have to look at the lobby and see how much CARE and other organizations have dumped into, how much China has dumped into the university system. So if you're going to talk about outside influence and money inside of our educational system, it comes from many different areas, none of which are pro-American when you really think about it. All of them are pro-interest. They're very understanding of the fact that the United States projects power around the world. And because of that, they want to curry favor with the next generation of students so that they can sit here and have them find their ideology and support it. So I don't see any difference between any of the groups that donate money to our politicians whatsoever. Now, whether or not that actually causes and influences policy reactions, yes, that does in every instance. That's what the money's there for. Do I think that they're cracking down on these protests because they are anti-Israeli or anti-Jewish or anything like that? No, I think this is just a knee-jerk reaction, quite frankly, to people kind of having enough of just people running their mouths about things that they don't know anything about. It's again, this is not the smart way to do this, in my opinion. But it's also, you got to ask yourself after watching 2020, where do you draw the line? You know, when you have the same people that are out there.
And what do you make of the fact, the timing of this? Because the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, he has literally just got up in front of the cameras and said, these protests need to be stopped. And then, you know, within hours of that, we see that thing happening in the US. Do you think this is just coincidence, or do you think that actually there is pressure coming from Israel on American politicians to act?
Well, I think that the difference between causation and coincidence is a very thin line. But in this instance, I'd say it's probably more coincidence in that these protests have been going on for quite a while. I'm not sure what triggered the sudden decision to crack down on them, other than maybe the escalation of violence on that side. But I got to tell you, here in the United States, although it's very important to most of us that we pay attention to what's happening in the world, I genuinely do not care what Benjamin Netanyahu says we should be doing on our campuses any more than I would matter what the King of England or Prime Minister of New Zealand would say about what we're doing here in this country.
Yeah. And about the Middle East, I mean, look, you know, it is, let's start off by just saying it was terrible what happened on the 7th of October. It was a crime. 1,200 Israelis brutally killed, hostages taken, which are still, some of them still being held now. So absolutely terrible, right? And I think Israel was a victim on that day, clearly. But what's happened since? I mean, we've seen 34,000 civilians now killed, more than a million people nearly starved, food and water restricted. We've seen, what else have we seen? We've seen snipers killing people waiting for food trucks to get food in Gaza. And now we're hearing that 400 bodies have been dug up and there's evidence of executions and torture. Don't you think those people across the US and in London, in the capital city of the UK, that are protesting in their millions, don't you think that actually they've got a point that, you know, what they're doing is calling for a ceasefire? Don't you think they've got a point in that?
No, I don't. Not at all. Sorry, I've been down range. I've been down to Afghanistan. I've had a little kid try to pull the pen out of my grenade. I've had to live with my buddies and us having to make decisions split second about whether or not a 12-year-old's going to blow us up. We luckily were put in a position where we never had to shoot any children or defend ourselves against any attack from children, my particular unit. I can say that I just don't think people understand what Palestine is. I don't think they understand what's going on in Gaza. I don't think they understand the root that's there of evil. I think that there are lots of innocent civilians. I think that they've done everything they can, Israel has, to evacuate them. But I think that when you have a military that has ingratiated itself into the population, yes, they are forcing it. This is all on Hamas. If you wanted to call me and say they just released all the hostages and Israel will not stop firing, then I would sit here and have a major problem with Israel at that point, because I understand that that's just one of the key factors here. But they're trying to eliminate Hamas's ability to fight ever again, to inflict that wound. And if this were my neighbor, I don't mean Mexico, I mean my neighbor, and they took my daughters and they were occasionally throwing grenades over the fence and they had killed some of my family, but they were holding my daughters and saying, we're not going to release your daughters. We're not going to do it, no matter what you do. There's no way you could stop me. There's no way you could stop me to go get my daughter. So I know that it's tragic. Civilian losses in war are never, ever, ever a good thing. Those are inaccurate numbers. It's hard to believe the Palestinian Authority on anything. But at this point, I think everyone is condemning Israel for something that you would never allow, I would never allow, no one would ever allow to happen to their country, ever, not once. And they've never been tested this way. We can say the United States has been tested. We did what we did, and we decimated two whole countries. And nobody said anything until 20 years later. And again, I'm not saying you're right, not morally justifying it. I'm not morally justifying it. I'm saying that how can you ask a country who still has their country members being held hostage? All Hamas has to do is release the hostages. Just release the hostages.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would say that, you know, there's nearly, I think it's, I don't know the exact figures, but it's more than 10,000 children have been killed by the bombs now.
Why are the children
Palestinian
there?
Well,
why are the children in the areas that the bombs are dropping?
Well, because it's their country. It's where they live, isn't it?
But the Israel, point is, anyway, Israel has given them notification and told them to leave. It's more than warned them. Hamas makes them stay there. Hamas, again, the evil here is Hamas. The collateral damage are the children. Should Hamas be allowed to continue to be evil because there might be there might be civilian deaths? Saying that is just, I understand you cannot use a heavy hand and just go say, hey, there's 10,000 people. Let's bomb them all because there's one terrorist. And that's not what's happening here as far as my military sources tell me. This is not a fun war. No one is excited about going in and killing civilians, but acting like like somebody firing mortars from behind a hospital and we just got to keep letting them do it. Now you don't go bomb the hospital, but you empty out the hospital and you level the building.
Jason, do you think, because we've seen videos I've seen videos where three men have been walking, clearly they're not doing it, they haven't got any arms on them, and they've been bombed by a missile. Now, this news about these 400 bodies that have been dug up, if it's shown and if it's proven and the UN is calling for the evidence to be kept intact, if it's shown that war crimes have been committed by Israel, do you think that changes things? Do you think that changes the narrative and what you're presenting?
I think it depends on who committed the war crime. So if you're saying they're sanctioned war crimes from the major body, then that absolutely changes it. Absolutely. No question. If they are just executing mass executions and dropping people, and I mean, there's just no question. Obviously. I can say that unequivocally, that would be the end of any support I would have. Now, if you're going to talk about individuals, individuals commit war crimes all the time. So are they being held accountable? I would expect that they would be, period. There is no room in this world for that kind of horror. And I'm never going to defend it. I won't even pretend to defend it. So what we're talking about are two separate sets of facts, and whether or not we believe the sets of facts that are being presented to us and how we analyze them. And from my tactical worldview and from my understanding of how it works, I understand the tactics they're using. That said, I will say, yes, any evidence of war crimes that's proven to be true, the people who commit those war crimes and atrocities absolutely need to be held accountable, period. That is why we have an international court.
And Jason, we've got less than a minute left, so it's probably a bit of an unfair question, but I'm going to ask you, do you think the two-state solution is dead?
No, I think Israel's been propositioning it for a long time, and I hope that Gaza will accept it one day.
Okay, thank you very much. Jason Nelson, thank you very much. It's very early in the morning, so thank you very much for taking all my questions. Thank you, Jason.
Thank you.
Right, okay, we're going to take a short break now, but it's not it yet. We've got another hour of the show, so don't go anywhere. I'll be right back right here in a moment on TNT.